This week on What's Going On with Earl Ingram, we sit down with Dr. Robert Craig to take a hard look at the Wisconsin State Legislature and the right-wing antics of Donald Trump. At a time when Democrats and Republicans are deeply divided, Dr. Craig unpacks the pressing issues facing our nation and explores how these deep-rooted tensions are reshaping the future of our government. Is America moving forward? Are we dismantling the very progress generations fought for? Dr. Craig brings his insight, his expertise, and his Milwaukee roots to a powerful conversation, something you don't want to miss. Come with us as we explore the hard questions about our direction and what that means to be equal in a world where justice and freedom are short-lived. Realities are not just ideals. Follow us on civicmedia.us or wherever you find your podcasts. Please also like and subscribe so you never miss the conversation.
All right, welcome back once again to What's Going On with Earl Ingram. And my guest is none other than Dr. Robert Craig, Executive Director of Citizen Action. And the latest information about what is happening politically statewide and across the nation, none other than Dr. Robert Craig. Good morning to you, my friend. Always great to have this opportunity to exchange ideas and information with you.
Always great to be with you, Earl, in these challenging and unprecedented in many ways times.
You know, Dr. Craig, it was 9 months ago, we were all hopeful that we wouldn't be where we are now, that Kamala Harris would somehow have won the presidency, and we wouldn't be faced with what we are faced with now. Are you at all surprised at the depth of what has transpired?
No, not at all, actually.
Really?
When I was in graduate school, University of Georgia, I started looking at the speeches of the rising right-wing members of Congress that were all connected to Newt Gingrich. And this is the kind of thing they were saying. They were trying to build the kind of hatred and the kind of radical right thinking that leads in this direction. And so I've always, for a long time, thought it was a major danger and took it more seriously, I think, than a lot of other folks. And so once they were able to gain complete control, after learning the lessons of the first time, and this is historically the case, authoritarians often don't fully succeed the first time. It's when you give them a second chance that they're more effective. And so, Project 2025 was public and was written, and despite Trump lying about it, was a blueprint. So I think even if Kamala Harris had won, though, Earl, democracy had atrophied and decayed a great deal, and it wasn't going to be some new beginning anyway. Then Biden's election was a new beginning, or Obama's before that. Unless we rebuilt the fundamentals of democracy, it was part of the reason President Biden failed, other than his age and that he wasn't up to a run for re-election, was what the kind of opposition he was facing. And so Kamala Harris would have the same problem. We might have lost 2028 to a J.D. Vance kind of character anyway. Or I don't know if Trump would have still been available in 2028. I guess we'll see. We'll still see if he tries to hold on to power. But we're going to have to fight this fight anyway, one way or another. It's extremely dangerous now because we're close to what is called by scholars of democracy, electoral autocracy, which is you have the mechanisms of liberal democracy, but only one side could win. That's what we had with the state legislature for 14 years in Wisconsin with the extreme gerrymander. Yes, there were elections. Yes, legislators claimed to have a mandate of the people, but only one side could win, and they were guaranteed a supermajority. That's what they're shooting for. Another term scholars use for it is competitive autocracy. It's competitive in that there still is an opposition. It can still run in elections. It still exists. It still critiques, but it can't win. The rules of the game are rigged against it. And so all you have to do is take what Trump and the MAGA folks all said about elections, the lies they said about being rigged. That was not rigged against them. Their goal is to rig it in their favor. So you can understand what their goals are by what their lies were about the 2020 election.
You know, Dr. Craig, the words flow from your mouth and they really paint a picture. But the picture they're painting, Dr. Craig, is, you know, we're at a point where if this doesn't get rectified in the next election, we may be, you know, headed down a path that we can't turn around from. Is it safe to say that?
Yes. I mean, or take a long time. We can look very quickly like other competitive autocracies, which is Hungary, Turkey, India, El Salvador, actually, we've created a concentration camp with their dictator. It doesn't mean you can't overthrow such a regime. It just may take a long time, and it's harder and harder. But it's the same methodology either way. Even authoritarian regimes, and all varieties, we're not going towards probably a single party military rule. We're going towards something that looks like the Wisconsin legislature the last 14 years. One side, the game is rigged, so only one side can win, and they hold all the power. You have to withdraw cooperation. Even the most authoritarian regimes require the assent of the population in general. And what large-scale nonviolent resistance does is it removes cooperation. It creates so much damage. It throws sands in the gears to such an extent that the system falls. And what we saw early after Donald Trump started this year, started his new term and started his constitutional rampage, him and Elon Musk at first, but Musk turned out to be a temporary leader in this, it appears. Maybe he'll come back. I don't know. Could have a sequel. the Democrats were still divided, and some wanted to play by the old rules of the game and to use the usual methods of legislative gamesmanship that had always worked in previous and at least in the 20th century in the United States, we're not in many ways the leaders willing to see the real situation. There were many among them that were: Bernie Sanders, AOC, Chris Murphy, the senator from Connecticut, a number did, but not enough of them, and not Chuck Schumer. And so the last time they had to provide their votes in order to keep the government open, Chuck Schumer led a small group of U.S. senators voting with the Republicans to keep the government open and allow Trump's rampage to continue. The backlash from the grassroots was so intense against that taught Schumer and the rest of the Democrats they can't do it again, which is what led to this current situation. But what they have done, Earl, is they've done what we all need to do. They've withdrawn cooperation. They're saying, you can't, if you need our votes, we're not going to let you do it unless you negotiate with us and meet our conditions. And their conditions are one urgent thing: the massive increase in healthcare costs that's about to come because of the actions of the Trump regime. And secondly, of course, just the rule of law. We can't go pass a budget that you then decide not to spend the things you don't want to spend. I won't send the money to blue states. I'll send it to red states. I'm going to close an agency that is part of the budget and destroy the whole, you know, character of the Constitution that vests the purse strings and legislative power in Congress, not the president. So that we don't know how this is going to turn out, Earl, but it's the only possible way to win and not simply cooperate in the destruction of democracy is to withdraw cooperation. I mean, that's what happened in the Montgomery bus boycotts, Earl. That's what that was about, or the famous Birmingham campaign, the civil rights movement. They disrupted the whole system so you couldn't run it and keep Jim Crow, right? By mass public action of non-cooperation of all the black folks that were held down by Jim Crow in the South.
You know, Dr. Craig, it's not just one thing. It's a totality of all the things that are taking place. I was looking at Pam Bundy on yesterday, and the fact that someone in that position as powerful as that position is, to talk to senators like she's talking to children, and to basically make it clear, we're in charge here, not you. I mean, how do you recover from that, right?
We've gotten that style for a while. People forget that's what Newt Gingrich, when he took over Congress, sounded like. And it's progressed. So this is how she's reflecting her boss. So the rhetorical style, Earl, that style of just complete disdain and disregard for a Senate committee, they'd never seen anything like that before, that actually perfectly parallels their view of democracy, their view of government, in fact, their view of average people. Do you remember, Earl, when we had the Trump blow up with Vladimir Zelensky?
Absolutely.
And included J.D. Vance, who was a major instigator. And Trump starts yelling at him at one point when he kept saying, we can't, you know, just surrender, or just they'll just without security guarantees, then they'll just wait and take us over later, right? He said, you don't have any cards. You don't hold any cards. Right. Basically, you don't matter. You know what? None of us hold cards with him except billionaires and the largest corporations. And so he's only going to, if he's ever going to make a deal, the art of the deal, the Democrats have to use their cards, and they're using them right now. And what's advantageous about this is that the Republicans know that the healthcare issue is a sleeping giant, that they are massively increasing the cost of healthcare for people, that people are going to get their new rates for 2026, and they're double, right, or even more. And so that puts incredible pressure on them. That's why they're getting the ridiculous proposal. Well, if you vote to keep the government open, then we'll negotiate with you over that. Well, you don't negotiate with this opponent without leverage. So you have to say, as they're saying, we'll negotiate now, or we're not voting for this.
You know, Dr. Craig, you again watch all of these different moving parts, and what comes to my mind is always, do the Republicans think they're going to stay in power forever? Because the things that they are talking about, giving the president of the United States supreme power, they can't undo that if they lose. And so that supreme power and the pendulum is going to swing back the other way. Do they not think that there's ever going to be that swing in the pendulum?
I'd say in the frame of your question, which meant we're not necessarily what Earl Ingram believes, you asked the question
yes. This
way, right? But the frame of the question assumes that both sides think of this as a system with stable rules, and if I change the rules to advantage myself now, I could be in a position where that hurts me later if I stack the deck, right? They don't see it that way. Their view would be to completely change the rules again, right? And go back, that there aren't stable rules, there's only power. And that's the authoritarian impulse. So does anyone really believe, because we have a MAGA-dominated U.S. Supreme Court, which is increases the threat level massively, that they would have granted immunity out of constitutional thin air to Joseph Biden if he had been if there were cases against him, right?
We already know the answer to that.
Yeah, and there are actually a whole lot of the several of the major lawsuits against Trump tried to take their previous principles to justify giving the right power and use them against them. You know what? I think we'll see them reverse themselves and just come up with another rationalization. I mean, and to use procedure. So, for example, they know that Trump having an executive order abolishing birthright citizenship, a part of the Constitution, the 14th Amendment, one of the most sacred parts of the Constitution, right, Earl? Because it was supposed to guarantee full equal civil human rights to Black people in this country. It took another 100 years to make it actually take effect fully because of Jim Crow and how Reconstruction turned out. But he declares an end to birthright citizenship. He can't, through executive order, change the Constitution. Well, the court hasn't said that's okay. They just keep pushing it back procedurally to the lower courts. So in the meantime, we don't have a right to birthright citizenship. We don't know when they're even going to get to this case. So the whole, in fact, they used the case to destroy the ability of lower court judges to enjoin him, remember? But they didn't take on the obvious, this is a flagrantly constitutional thing. If you have a shadow docket where without briefing you act immediately, there's no better case for that than this flagrantly unconstitutional thing that is shredding people's basic rights and causing people to be deported potentially or a right to be here or in the interim. And they've let this go on now for months and months and months.
You know, Dr. Craig, I've had conversations with people who have already given up. And so they feel as if their votes don't matter. Part of this and what's taking place is they're breaking the spirit of many American citizens who now believe that there's nothing in which to vote for. How dangerous is that?
Well, very, and that's the authoritarian playbook. And yet your votes may not matter. What matters is people getting involved and taking to the streets, going to the next No Kings rallies, yes, which are going to be in a couple Saturdays.
As a matter of fact, I'm going to be the MC of that rally.
That is awesome.
I'm excited about that. But anyway, go ahead to No Kings rally.
So
go ahead.
They need to take action. So yes, this is what happens. People had to fight hard. People had to fight wars in order to guarantee your right to vote. The right to vote, or the right to right for your vote to matter. Maybe you'll have a right to vote, but your chosen candidate can't win, right? Which is not really a right to vote.
Right.
Requires us fighting for it, and we don't have to fight for it. Violence doesn't work very well. They have all the guns, Earl.
Yes,
but peaceful, nonviolent resistance. There's very good.
Well, look at Portland.
This is extremely successful if enough people get involved.
Well, Dr. Craig, look at Portland. That's exactly what they're doing, and they're causing all sorts of mayhem. You know, that's what is consistently sending the message, right? I mean, as many people as possible have to hit the streets. The politicians alone on the other side of this can't fix it.
Yeah, and there's chaos going on. I mean, in Chicago, you know, running around with masks agents, this is before the Texas National Guard arrives, right? Because it doesn't look like so far the courts are blocking that one, but they blocked the Portland one. Again, that's just the problem with relying on the courts. That they're doing all sorts of agitation and confronting people. You see all these, all this video you can see,
yes,
you can go online and see it, of people in downtown Chicago looking askance as these large groups of masked people are marching down their streets, down in the loop, right?
I mean,
well, at first, the Chicago police were saying, we're not going to cooperate with you, we're just going to stay out. But when they started getting confronted much more physically by a small group of protesters, not most protesters, right? Most of it been extremely peaceful. Now the police, and they called 911. So Ike's called 911, Earl. And police didn't come. Now they're changing their position because, okay, we have to prevent violence. So they've created the mayhem themselves, create the incident, right? They're trying to literally instigate this, right? Create the conditions for it that then justify them sending military force in. Now they've gotten it, so the Chicago police have to defend them. The other thing that's going on is, Earl, there's been very well organized response with a lot of people watching everything they're doing in the city of Chicago. But the inner suburbs, which have a lot of Latinos in them, suburbs like Cicero, Berwyn, Melrose Park, they have a lot of Latinos in them. They aren't as well organized. So they started doing the raids there. So my mother lives in Berwyn, one of those suburbs. And yes, Berwyn is under siege right now. So they're literally trying to find where they can go and pick up the most people, because this is about, you know, stalking out a Walmart parking lot and then grabbing people, telling the big lie, because in the campaign, Earl, who were they going to target?
Only the criminals.
Gang
members.
What? Biden and Obama targeted the dangerous criminals too. They couldn't get their mass proportion numbers unless they went and got average people. And that's, and so they lied flatly and outright as to what this was about. So we're just stalking out where people who are part of communities and just doing their job, being a major part of the economy. Not even all the benefits are old, because if they're undocumented, they're not going to get any of those Social Security and Medicare benefits they're paying into.
You know, the part of this, Dr. Craig, that really is just so frightening to me is the fact that you've got people who are Democrats who are going along with this and saying, yeah, crime is too big, the crime issue, and I go along with Trump because we've got to fix the crime issue in the country. Never mind that many of the people who are saying that don't live in an area, Dr. Craig, where there's a lot of crime. But when you say you agree with that, you kind of, you know, make it possible that this is going to be something that they're going to be able to keep doing, that you know, you've got people on the left who support this.
It's just a pretext they need to understand for taking control. The worst thing for the Trump administration is if crime would disappear, right? They need it as a pretext. And what they're doing, of course, doesn't make crime any worse. First, itself is constitutional crime, right? And they're trying to create incidents, trying to create violent confrontation so they can justify taking more power. So they're getting smart in New York and Chicago, where both organizing groups, civil society groups, and elected leaders are starting to repeat what would actually reduce crime, you know, actual investments in mental health infrastructure, in early intervention, alternatives to incarceration, which they've cut and which is underfunded, and saying then demanding that you actually give us the resources we need to actually do what's proven to reduce crime, which of course is preventing it in the first place and getting to folks very early in the process before, right? So there you have it. But I don't think this is all about crime. Crime's the pretext, but some people are gonna take the bait, Earl, unfortunately, and we need to keep responding to them if they are open to listening.
You know, Dr. Craig, you're watching as President Trump and is threatening to lock up Governor Pritzker and the mayor of Chicago. I mean, this is kind of way out there. You couldn't even think that this could be possible, but all we have to do is look at what happened to what's the judge's name here, and why am I forgetting her name, who was arrested and charged, Hannah Dugan. I mean, this stuff was not even conceivable, Dr. Craig. Now it is.
Well, part of Trump's excitement among his base was the transgression of it, right? In 2016, when he took off, that he was saying things no one else would say.
Right.
People are angry enough, they just want transgression. The problem is, it's like shock value in entertainment. You know, it's like on soap operas or in entertainment, you have to go further and further because what shocked people before becomes normal, right? So you had to go all the way from the shock value, I'll go back in TV history, of Phil Donahue, where you might have some atheist debating Catholics on the air, to Jerry Springer, where people are getting fistfights all the time, right? And so that's the problem with Trump. The transgression needs to get greater. So, okay, now we're going to arrest a governor and a mayor. What happens if that is no longer a transgression, if he's able to get away with it? We got to start executing them, right? This is kind of where it goes, right?
You know, Dr. Craig, Kristi Noem making threats, the same thing with the mayor of Portland. And this stuff is just, it's over the top. And it just does not appear to be a will. Well, they've got control over everything, Dr. Craig. I mean, the Democrats, as you stated, even if they wanted to, they know the impact of the government being shut down. But what other cards do they have to play, Dr. Craig? They have no other cards. They have to take this to its final conclusion.
They have to do, by withdrawing their cooperation, enough damage to the Trump regime, which is very unpopular, right? Which is in danger of losing the elections in 2026. They're doing everything to try to rig the system so they can't lose it, but they've not accomplished that yet. We don't know what he's capable of as far as claiming a national emergency the day before the election and seizing all the ballot boxes. Who knows? But they're not, you know, if you look at like Viktor Orban in Hungary, the problem is he's widely popular, right? No, and so that, and that's the same of dictators in Italy, in India, excuse me, and in Turkey. So he is not fully consolidated power. He can be damaged. They, of course, have another card on the table, Earl, that isn't really being talked about. The only reason they have to do this, have to rely on Democrat votes in the Senate, is because of the filibuster, because of the completely not in the Constitution 60 vote threshold. So maybe their solution is to end the filibuster. You know what? That's something we should all applaud if that happens, because it also prevents us from passing the kind of legislation that improves people's lives. And that's the other part of the crisis of democracy. For some reason, people are walking away from elections, even some considering voting for Trump, like a lot of young men, right? Black and white, right, and brown, is because they don't see democracy doing anything for them. So the crisis in democracy is both the attack on its institutions, but fascism is sort of a response to democracy's failure in many ways. So you need to make democracy actually deliver for people.
So
is why in the state elections, we are being really, at Citizens Action Wisconsin, I lead hardcore on, we want candidates and we will support candidates and we are pushing candidates to adopt agendas that would actually improve people's lives. No more poll-tested talking points which don't actually lead anywhere, that are just like public relations branding and not real things that could transform people's lives.
So, Dr. Craig, are the Democrats paying attention to the direction that Citizen Action and others are going, or is it politics as usual?
It's more complicated than that. For a while, at least since 2016 in the first Bernie Sanders campaign, there's been kind of both views in the Democratic Party.
Right.
And I think the more status quo view has held more power within it in general, but the reason Biden moved substantially and adopted a whole lot of Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren's ideas and others, other major leaders and movements, was because he saw the tea leaves and he wanted to sue for peace with the progressive wing of the party. So I think it's to be determined. I think that it's a major step that the national congressional Democrats are unified on not providing votes to keep the government open until their conditions are met on health care and on their budget actually mattering and actually being followed by the executive, by the president. And so within Wisconsin, we've just had a very, very conservative Democrat governor, for a Democrat who had very little ambition, who is a lame duck now, Tony Evers. I think that the heart and soul of the party is very much up for grabs right now. And so I told you what direction Citizen Action, and we have a lot of other allied groups that are in this same field and position, are trying to do. But there are also a lot of inside actors, you know, people who are elected or part Democratic Party, they're doing the same thing. When we were demanding that Governor Evers veto the budget unless it met certain conditions, something he did not listen to, a number of people who are in positions of Democratic authority who told me, I can't say this publicly, I can't disagree with the governor, public is my position, but off the record, I think it's great what you're doing, keep doing it. So I think there's a lot of also unstated support in parts of the Democratic Party for this.
So Dr. Craig, for those of us who aren't as connected to this on the front line is you and organizations like Civic, I forgot about your, the name of your organization.
Citizen
Action of Wisconsin. Across the nation, do they are they doing kind of like the same kind of thing, and they realize we can't look at this thing on the national level? We've got to focus on these local races, these local issues, and try to take control over the states and then eventually take control over the nation, because that's what the Republicans did.
It's both a state and national strategy, and yes, there's a lot of creativity and energy here, though people see an urgent crisis. I'm right after this show, I'm flying out of Milwaukee to a convening of 1,000 different organizers from 40 different major networks of organizations to discuss this. So yes, and we are part of it, but there is a much larger movement developing, and you've also seen it with the general public, it's looking like the first major No Kings rally was one of the, perhaps the largest public mobilization in American history by the number of people, and we need that to continue. So there's a lot going on. It doesn't mean guarantee we're going to win, but I as well tell your listeners it means we have a chance, but it depends on all of you, because our power is people getting involved and working together and building a large, peaceful, nonviolent resistance and a positive program for democracy that actually makes people invest in it again. And that's what happened in the 1930s. People didn't think democracy could solve the Great Depression. People don't realize that Franklin Delano Roosevelt's biggest accomplishment might not have been this particular New Deal programs, but convincing people that democracy could address their problems and make a better life for themselves. And we know that worked out into building the largest middle class in the history of the world after World War II.
Dr. Craig, do you think that, you know, that was so long ago, and so people, the history of it, those who knew of that history are gone for the most part, and so people did not believe and thought that democracy would remain the same. Is it safe to say, Dr. Craig, that every generation is responsible for fighting for democracy? It's not something that's etched in stone?
To the extent you believe in generational responsibility, that generations are a thing, yes, it means all people at all times, that history doesn't end. So there was not, you know, we had philosophers talking about the end of history with the end of the Cold War, Francis Fukuyama, but he got it from an earlier philosopher who did the same thing after World War II, I believe. But I think that in a way, too many people start taking our basic institutions for granted, not understanding how hard they were to establish, and also not realizing how imperfect they were, how many people were still left out, how much inequality was still there. You see the level of inequality in our country based on race. That doesn't reflect a successful equal society. Neither does the massive income gap we have built over the last 40 years. We went from one of sharing the fruits of a very wealthy country in terms of its broader wealth, gross domestic product, after World War II into the late 70s. And now we've become in a much even richer country, but it's now distributed very unequally. We created billionaire class that is much more powerful than anything we saw in the Gilded Age when we had the robber barons. So apparently we had to learn the lesson of letting the robber barons get all the money, and we're gonna have to run the early to mid 20th century again, but that required a lot of effort, a lot of organizing, and there was no success guaranteed. But yeah, if you don't fight for things, you lose them in human civilization. I think this is part of the human condition.
You know, Dr. Craig, why it's always so important and to have a conversation and a dialogue with you is because you always make it clear that we're not giving up, okay? And no war is ever won without a fight. And this is one that clearly, you know, it appears as though the other side has the control over even media outlets and those types of things. But as you stated, the power is still with the people. And the people have to organize, and the people have to be willing to turn over pebbles, not just stones, turn over pebbles. And if democracy is important enough to the future of their children, because my generation has enjoyed the fruits of democracy, we've got to fight for democracy for those who come after us.
And it's going to be exerting, inflicting economic harm on collaborators as well as the regime. So look, there was just a big victory temporarily, potentially, that's what I, about around Jimmy Kimmel, right?
Oh,
what
yes.
The Trump administration did with the FCC was to say, in essence, we're not going to approve a merger you need, you think you need to be competitive to the parent company unless you cancel Jimmy Kimmel. They canceled Jimmy Kimmel. There was this hundreds of thousands of people canceled their Disney subscriptions, their Hulu subscriptions, their ESPN position, everything related to ABC, and they reversed themselves. Now, I want to say that shows what public people can do, non-cooperating and working together, right? But on the other hand, they may just be waiting their term. They still have that leverage. They may try to do it again or do something else again to control ABC or say, okay, you can keep Jimmy Kimmel, but here's what we demand. So my point is, it's not over. It was a battle, not the whole war. But I want people to realize what just happened. The ABC company just decided that the public was doing more damage to them for canceling Jimmy Kimmel than the Trump regime was going to do to them if they didn't cancel Jimmy Kimmel. And that is the key to this. They have to, because these corporate actors are all about their bottom lines, they have to make the calculation that the cost of concession to authoritarianism is higher than the cost of resistance. That's what Harvard decided, as opposed to Columbia. But it was partly because Harvard, there was a ton of organizing within Harvard to create a much higher cost on Harvard to going along with the regime.
Yeah.
Not enough of that happened in Columbia, but also at Columbia, it happened earlier, so they became a cautionary note to everyone else as to what could happen.
Yeah, but Harvard capitulated.
I mean, they did not capitulate
like okay.
Columbia did. I do think it's not fully won and that Harvard is looking to sue for peace in all sorts of ways.
Well, $500 million is, you know, at the root of all of it is the evil mighty dollar.
The key thing Harvard did, though, is Harvard did not, what they were demanding of Harvard is to hand over control of the university's curriculum and hiring to the Trump regime, and they at least prevented that. But I agree, it's complicated, and we can't rely on the Harvards, the Columbias, to lead the fight, but we need to put pressure on them not to capitulate, because as you know, Timothy Snyder, the philosopher who's written about tyranny, a couple very sharp small books on tyranny that have a lot of attention. His first rule is don't cooperate in advance. And so that's what, when people stop voting, they're cooperating in advance. These institutions are looking to cooperate in advance. We have to raise the cost on them so highly that they don't cooperate, because it'll be worse for them, like ABC, if they do.
So, Dr. Craig, have a safe flight, a safe trip, and I can't wait till you give us the information about where all of these masterminds and what their plans are, because we certainly need it.
Yeah, and it's not going to suddenly change everything. So what I just laid out about people getting involved directly in nonviolent action, and there's no brilliant strategy that will work without that. But then you need strategy for it as well. So, but thank you, world.
Dr. Craig, thank you as always. Have a safe trip, and we'll see you on the other side.